Hi, my name is Yemi Oyediran, and I'm here to speak with Bobby Broom. Bobby is a guitarist and educator from Chicago, and over the last 30 years, he's played with the likes of Sonny Rollins, Stanley Turrentine, and some other fantastic musicians. On October 24th, he'll be featured at Cafe Vivace playing with his ensemble, featuring Dennis Carroll on bass and Kyle Swan on drums. Yeah, so Bobby, one of the things I wanted to start with is asking you about your experience with Sonny Rollins. You started playing with Sonny at a really young age and proceeded to record on about 5 of Sonny's records. How did that come about? How did you meet Sonny Rollins and start playing in his group at such a young age?
Yeah, the meeting was kind of a magical experience for me. As you can imagine, at that age, I was doing an off-Broadway play in Brooklyn at the time, and it entailed me playing on stage. I was one of the actors as well as a musician in the orchestra. So one of my role required that I go on stage and play a little solo. And so one of Sonny's sidemen, a guitarist, was in the audience one night and heard me, invited me to go to a rehearsal. I think he said it was an audition, which didn't make much sense to me at the time because he told me when we met that he was Sonny's guitarist. But I took him up on his offer, and so that's how I met Sonny. Just went to this rehearsal and played with him. It was Bob Cranshaw on bass and a gentleman named Eddie Moore, who is no longer living, on drums. Myself and Sonny, and we played for an hour or so, and that began the relationship, which lasted about 10 years.
What was it like to get the call to perform with him at Carnegie Hall?
Again, kind of a miraculous thing. We did that rehearsal, and he asked me to join the band and to go on the road at that time, and I couldn't. I was a senior in high school, so I had to tell him I couldn't do it. And he said, okay, well, I'll call you when I get back to New York after this tour. And so I had no idea what that meant, but he did. He was true to his word, and he called one night and asked me to join him at the concert at Carnegie Hall. And I was thinking about it. It's kind of funny. And of course, I said I accepted his offer, and it was just a great experience. You know, I was a senior in high school doing something as huge as that. You know, that was a great experience. It just kind of set me more firmly along the path that I had already chosen for myself. You know, I was already determined to spend my life, devote my life to jazz music. It meant that much to me. I felt that strongly about it. And so then just getting the endorsements of, you know, iconic figures in the music like Sonny and Al Haig and Walter Bishop Jr. and people of that ilk, getting their support and encouragement just kind of solidified my goals and my quest and kind of made me feel like I was moving in the right direction and doing things the right way.
So one thing that a lot of listeners might not be familiar with is that you had a great relationship with Stanley Turrentine. How did you get to know Stanley, and what were some things that he imparted to you when you worked with him?
Stanley and I met around that same time, maybe a little bit later. I was in my early 20s when I met Stanley. And I think that it happened because I got called to do a tour with a collection of well-known jazz musicians. Stanley Turrentine, Roy Ayers, Patrice Rushen, Lenny White, Gene Karn was the singer, and I was asked to play guitar. The Jazz Explosion was the name of the tour, and we toured around the United States with that group. So I believe that's when I first met Stanley. So, you know, that was an opportune way to kind of get to know him, just playing every night, you know. And he was, again, very supportive, and it went on from there. I think he called me to do one of his records around that time or shortly after the tour. We had a mild radio hit with a tune that he and I played the melody together on. And then quite a few years later, when he asked me to go out on the road with his band.
One of the things that I find to be really interesting about your career that seems to model Stanley's career is your ability to play within multiple styles of jazz to almost transcend the genre very much like Stanley did. You know, Stanley did soul records, did some killing soul records, did some big band records. One of my favorites is this album called In the Memory Of.
That's my absolute favorite Stanley record.
That album is fantastic.
I'm glad you're talking about Stanley Turrentine, because I don't believe that people talk enough about him.
Oh, he's the man.
One of the main figures on that instrument of the tenor saxophone in terms of having a personable voice. I mean, his voice was so well received, so embraced, his sound, you know, and his style. And like you said, he could play anything really. It's like a singer, a great singer, interpreting songs, you know, whatever the style, they bring their signature to it. So that record, I point to that record in memory of by him, because to me, he plays as much great jazz saxophone as anyone ever on that record. Great example of jazz saxophone, and people associate him in, you know, all kinds of ways. Oh yeah, he played pop, or yeah, he was crossover. Like, no, he was a great jazz saxophone.
With Stanley was able to really embrace the future movements of jazz from his era. And
yeah.
I wonder what you think when you play, and I know you've worked with guys, a friend of mine, Mekhi McRaven, and Mekhi has a very future thinking way of looking at the idiom. Because I've also noticed you draw inspiration from a lot of these guys. How does that inform you? Because you're kind of on both ends of jazz. You have a direct connection to the 52nd Street days. And you also have a connection to like the cutting edge of what's going on right now. And that's a very rare experience for professionals in any career. And I just wonder what your thoughts are about the future of jazz, the way jazz is going, and maybe even the audiences and how the audiences change over the span of your career.
Well, it's cool to be seen that way. I appreciate that. And I really hope to do more with the younger guys. And, you know, I've even talked to Mekhi, and I need to keep bugging him about doing something together, because we should. And I do embrace the sound of the modern era, I'll say. In fact, I was just listening to the saxophonist Braxton Cook. Are you familiar with him?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I was listening to his record just a minute ago and really kind of getting into that. I really like his music. Yeah, so I'm open and really eager to work with these guys and continue the movement, if you will. I think as long as jazz musicians play music for the people, as long as they play music that is memorable, that is hummable, you know, that makes people want to move or dance if they can, you know, tap their feet, sway back and forth. People have to connect to something in music. It can't be an intellectual exercise. So I think that may be one of the issues with jazz and audiences. Audiences want to participate. They want to feel included in whatever they're doing, spending their money on, and spending their extracurricular time doing. They don't want to be taught a lesson, you know. So I think the audiences are here, they're available, and I think it's up to the jazz musician to include them. And that's why I do a lot of what I do. I play the songs from my childhood. Just try to find ways to connect music to real life.
Living in Chicago, and you've lived in Chicago for about 30 years now, the audiences there have such a way of appreciating jazz. So there's a couple of Cincinnati standouts that have gone to live in Chicago. And when they come home, they always talk about how strong it is to play in front of those audiences. Guys like Andrew Toombs. I'm certain that the city plays so much a part in your musical growth. What are some things that you see different from growing up in New York City to growing up in Chicago, or playing in Chicago, rather?
Well, I'm thinking about a different era now when I think about my time in New York. Growing up there, playing there. Jazz audiences there are sophisticated. They really know the music. But I think really, when it comes down to it, audiences are pretty much the same. And I think it's what I said earlier. You know, people just want to feel something. They want to be included. They want to feel like, you know, they're connected to what's happening.
Your latest release, Soul Fingers, is absolutely fantastic. One of the things I find interesting on it, you did a bossa nova version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps. How'd that come about?
Let's see. So, you know, Steve Jordan produced the record, and we were thinking about programming, and I had a list of tunes that I had worked on and had conceptualized just in terms of the feel and the, you know, the style, if you will, the approach to the song. And Steve says, we need a bossa nova. You got to do a bossa nova. All great jazz records got to have a bossa nova. Let me see what tune would lend itself from that era, because, you know, I'm looking for my material from like the 70s for the most part, was where I was going for my childhood favorite songs, radio songs, you know. And I just thought of that one. It's kind of a ballad, at least it feels like one. And so ballads lend themselves to that bossa nova feeling. It's not too much of a stretch.
Also on that record is the song Eyes of Faith, which has slowly become a favorite of mine. It has great string arrangement by this guy, Matt Jones. How did you guys put that together in the studio?
Well, let's see. So Eyes of Faith is the only original on the record, right? And so I felt it had a strong melody. And that, to me, is the main element of any of those top 40 pop songs of that era. You had to have a melody, again, that was hummable, that was memorable. And that was one of the elements that constituted a hit, made people gravitate toward it and want to live with it forever, you know. So I felt that Eyes of Faith had a good melody and could hold up alongside these other popular songs. So we did it as just the rhythm section. And Steve says, okay, you know, we had done the tracks. And he says, I think, you know, a couple of these songs need something more. So what can we do? And so I said, well, you know, if I had my druthers, I would do a string quartet on Eyes of Faith. And so we were trying to figure that out, who we could get to play cello. And then I remembered meeting Matt Jones. We met at a jam session and he was playing piano, but the word on the street at that time was that he was a great arranger. He wasn't primarily a pianist. He was a great arranger. And so I recalled that meeting and I finally tracked him down. And fortunately, he knew who I was. He was, you know, happy to do it. So he heard the track and he says, yeah, I want to do full strings on this. And I said, okay, have at it. And he did it on that tune and on The Guitar Man, which is another, you know, one of my favorites back then by Bread.
You usually work with Kobe Watkins. Is that who you're bringing in town this week, or are you coming with Kyle Swan, who's another fantastic drummer?
I'm bringing Kyle Swan with me, who I've known since he was in high school, and watching him develop. And we finally got a chance to get together, and we've done a couple of gigs already.
Who else is joining you on this date?
Dennis Carroll is the bassist. You know, he's been with me forever. So it'll be the guitar-centric group, you know, not the organ group. But I think we share some of the same songbook. And we do maybe not the same pop tunes from the Soul Fingers record, but, I've recorded a bunch of tunes of that ilk on previous records. And I think that's what jazz musicians have done since day one. You know, they play folk music, they play popular songs, and they interpret them as jazz musicians do. So I feel like I'm just continuing that practice. And so I think since I started recording in about 2000, the first record with the trio, Stan, the title tune was Stan from Sly and the Family Stone, and we did other songs like Happy Together and Mamas and Papas, Monday, and
you know. Wow, that's really diverse.
Songs that are not associated with jazz, but when you hear them, you go, oh man, this actually works really well. It's just, you know, it's just good music.
Well, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us today. We're
Thank
really
you.
Looking forward to your performance at Cafe Vivace on October 24th.
I hope to see you there.
I've been talking with Bobby Broom, who will be appearing at Cafe Vivace on October 24th with his wonderful trio. For WVXU, I'm Yemi Oyediran.